A song by Lennox Barclay with words by W.H. Auden, Lay Your Sleeping Head, My Love. The pianist was Malcolm Martineau, and the tenor was a member of Radio 3's New Generation Artist Scheme, Robin Trichler. He'll be providing part of the music in our prom at lunchtime tomorrow, the Chamber Music Prom at Cadogan Hall in London. We'll be live there from 1 o'clock. He'll be joined on stage by the London Concord Ensemble, singing pieces by Poulenc, Imogen Holst, Warlock and Couperin. Meanwhile, Malcolm Martineau will be at the Edinburgh International Festival tomorrow, as will we. He'll be alongside the soprano Dorothea Rushman for a performance of the Liederkreis by Schumann and songs by Wolf. Meanwhile, there's more Britain on the cards at the BBC Proms.
Saturday matinees at the BBC Proms. In 1952, our Proms anniversary composer Benjamin Britten heard a piece in which seven modern French composers had each written a variation on a theme by the 17th century composer Compre. Britten thought about doing a British version, and why not on a tune like Selinger's Round, which would be ideal for a new collective tribute to the new Queen Elizabeth. Imogen Holst, Lennox Barclay, Michael Tippett, William Walton, and now, 60 years after the coronation, the English Chamber Orchestra adds two new variations to that set. I'm Clemency Burton-Hill. Join me for a new take on an intriguing set of variations. Saturday afternoon at the BBC Proms from 3 o'clock.
And that's at Cadogan Hall, as indeed we will be, as I say, at lunchtime tomorrow at 1. And by the way, we're live at Queen's Hall in Edinburgh at 11 o'clock tomorrow for the next in our series of relays from the Edinburgh International Festival. This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and in high-definition sound online. It's just after 10 o'clock, and next tonight, World Roots. And tonight, Lapa Kattari introduces the first of two programmes from the Rainforest World Music Festival, which took place last month on the island of Borneo.
Tonight, from the Orang Ulu community, we ask for blessings for everyone here at the Rainforest World Music Festival.
Behind me, the sea stretches out gently, reflecting the vivid colours of the setting sun. And in front of me, covered in a deep green canopy, the hills rise up swiftly from the edge of the beach. I'm in Borneo, in the Malaysian state of Sarawak, to be exact, the largest island in Asia, and I'm here for the Rainforest World Music Festival. It's hard to believe that under the dense vegetation are thousands of people making their way on the raised wooden pathways and the slippery bamboo bridge to the clearing and the main stage. It's appropriately called the tree stage, as towering over it are some of the tallest, grandest trees I've ever seen. Now, whether or not you believe in the spirits of the forest, this blessing that's being sung to mark the beginning of the festival is a reminder that we are in a very special place, a living, breathing system that we should pay our respects to. Now, over the next two World Roots programmes, we're going to bring you some of the best music from the festival, ranging from hypnotic bamboo gongs to Indonesian jazz folk. And we start with Rhythm in Bronze, a gamelan ensemble of feisty women who took up playing music because of a great love story.
Blessings upon all of you here at the festival. Thank you.
a piece there called Sakar Anya from Rhythm in Bronze. And I'm here with three members of the band, Shamini, Gillian and Adila. The gamelan I've always associated with Indonesia. So it's quite unusual to have a Malaysian group performing, is that right?
Yes. The Malay gamelan is actually very, very unknown internationally. So what we are trying to do is we're trying to popularize the gamelan, Malay gamelan, because I think the scale, the music, the sound it makes is very different from the Javanese and the Balinese. And it has a very soothing sound. And I think that's what we want people to hear.
So what is the difference between the Malay gamelan and the Java, the Balinese gamelan?
Well, we have less instruments than them because originally the gamelan came from Indonesia. The set from Indonesia was brought over when the princess from the Riau Lingga Islands married into the royal courts of Pahang. That's on the east, a state on the east coast of Peninsula Malaysia today. And the princess there brought her whole dance troupe as well as the gamelan set over there. And that's how she started teaching people the gamelan, you know, and the dances associated with it. So now we have about 20 to 25 pieces that everyone, every Malay gamelan player knows, but not much more beyond that.
History was when the Sultana passed on, the Sultan was very devastated and he decided to ban this because his wife was the one who was the dance court dancer and all that, and he locked it up, and he got locked up for years until the 60s or 70s when the universities came in and they took it out from the palaces and put it into
the state. The first time the gamelan was brought back out with all the dust taken off it and brought out and performed in public was at the Experimental Theatre of the University of Malaya in Kuala Lumpur.
It's amazing when I actually saw the original instrument in Terengganu. It is such a beautiful instrument. It looks so really old and antique, but the sound is really good.
So the pieces that you play are really quite new.
Well, we actually invited Pak Wayan E. Rajik from Bali to come and help train us in the Balinese style of playing, because that's when we started out in the early days. Yes. And we were like, no, we want to learn the Balinese style. And so he came. He came with all his little notations that we couldn't understand at all. And he had such a headache because he was like, this sounds different from what I have at home. And so he had to stop the class and sleep on it and came the next day with a totally new, different structure for us.
So for us, we try and learn as much as we can to understand the traditional of each style of gamelan, whether it's Javanese, Balinese or Malay. We even went through Pak Osman, who's our Malay gamelan teacher, and we at least learned how the tradition is before we can even consider going into contemporary, because if you do not have that foundation of understanding how it works. So we are just learning to understand what it is.
Is this right that it's your first time going on a serious trip to perform?
This is the first time we are sending our instruments through the air freight. And it is turning out to be a big challenge for us. It is really heavy. It's about a 1,000 kg. Yeah.
And how many boxes have you got then?
16.
Now, how long does it take you to reassemble everything then?
I must tell you, when the first time we came here, it took us a good solid 1.5 hours, 2 hours to do that. But yesterday, after the workshop, because we needed to put it back and then send it to the stage, we did it in a record time, half an hour?
Yeah, we're getting better.
We're getting better. With more manpower, we had to see all of us are women. And so it's actually only one sole guy. So he is the one who is responsible to make sure everything is in the order.
Tell me, is it just by accident, bar your one male, that you're all women?
Actually, we wanted to do a concert about myths around the gamelan and also about rhythm and bronze. And one of the myths is, why is it always women? And it's not just women, but women who have a lot of strength and character in them. I mean, if you see us perform, you can see each of our characters in the way we perform. You can see each of our strength in different levels, in different ways. And we are always asking, why is it, are we scaring the men away or something like that? But Uma doesn't seem scared, so.
We're an ensemble, not just in terms of the instruments, but the players as well. So we have to all fit together. There's no conductor. We all kind of have to have the same feel and gel together to make, it's all these different bits and pieces making one sound. So maybe by accident, it happened to be a sort of all female energy that takes that.
Yeah, and it takes a lot of dedication to be in as a group. And if you notice, most of us are either not married or very dependent, except, or you know, it takes a lot of time for us because we spend a lot of time in rehearsals.
It's quite a commitment. Is this what all of you do full time, or are you juggling full-time work and careers as well?
Unfortunately, performing arts is not a very good source of income in Malaysia at the moment. We do have to depend on our full-time job, or not we won't be able to survive.
So what else do you? You're lawyers, accountants, bankers, teachers.
I am actually a lawyer.
You're a lawyer. You're a lawyer, Jill. What are you?
I do marine biogeography. So I lecture at the University of Malaya, but in the geography department.
And you?
I work for Malaysia Airlines.
Oh, so you managed to get all your excess baggage through, no problem.
Because I tried to separate my life from, you know, it gets really murky when you have both. So I keep myself, I be very biased. I say, you're going to ask Malaysia Airlines, oh fine, I won't get involved in it.
That's fantastic, real rhythm in bronze. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Apakah cahaya ini?
Rhythm in Bronze, the Gamelan Ensemble from Malaysia, a hardy troupe of working women who I think are beginning to realise that their love of music has its downside, especially when it means transporting nearly a ton of musical instruments around the place. Well, someone who travels a lot lighter is Arthur Borman and his group Made, who slipped into my bedroom, a beautiful wooden chalet on stilts overlooking the South China Sea. And they're here for a private session. Arthur, tell us a little bit about the first piece you're going to play. The music essentially is very trance-like. It's very hypnotic.
All right. The song is called Buat Jug. And this piece of music is called Sabakang Senayat, a piece of music used to be played at the building where we still keep the trophies during the headhunting era. That is all the skulls, the human skulls. And in English, we can simply put it as a piece of the headhunters.
Arthur, peace for their headhunters. Is that right?
Yes.
Of course, there's no more headhunting anymore these days.
No more.
So it's become more of a performance piece, has
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. But people in the village still remember that the last one was in 1990, which we still have it, the performance in that building with the big, long war drum, which is about 16 feet long.
Tell me something about where you live. Give us a picture of what it's like.
Okay. We are from a longhouse or a village which is 65 kilometers away from the city of Kuching, Sarawak. And it is around the foothill of the highest mountain in Kuching region that is formerly called Panrisan Mountain. Well, it's why we are called the Bi Dayuh. Bi means people, Dayuh means the land. People of the land, people of the interior land. And when we talk about headhunting, we were always on the run. But at the same time, we have to protect ourselves against those aggressors. Yeah? So we have to kill or be killed. And that is why among the Bidayuh settlement of Sarawak, it is normal to see that they are far away in the inner land of Sarawak and always close to a hills or mountain, because it was not that easy for the enemies to attack them in the top of the hill or in the mountain area. Gradually, when there was peace, they slowly moved down to an area which is close to the river because there was no road. So the only means of transportation in a better way to carry many things is by boat or by a bamboo raft. So they use the river.
How large is your village?
Well, our village has been counted is 142 doors. Yeah. So the people, we counted last year, it's about 200 plus every day. Because a lot of them, the children, the grandchildren, move out to the city and elsewhere. Because for those who attend higher education, they might not be able to practice what they have learned in the village. So they move to many other places in Malaysia and overseas. But they still come back to the village and we still count them as one of our citizens of the village.
Are you concerned at all then about how you keep your music and your traditions alive?
Well, there is always the concern, yes. But I put it to myself that there is nothing to worry about. Take life easily. There will be people who will learn it. Because I felt that when I was young, I need to explore something new. So I went out from the village to work, do this and that, learn new things from different places. But at the end of the day, we still come back.
Tell me something about this beautiful bamboo gong. Basically, it looks like, what, a meter long piece of very thick bamboo that you've carved out and then stripped off the skin to make into a sort of string over the top of it.
It is a bamboo from the tropical rainforest. What's important here is the diameter of the bamboo and also the thickness. So it must not be too thick, otherwise the sound will be dull.
And just watching you play just now, there are three elements to the way in which you play. You hit it, you pluck it, and
we drum on it.
You drum on it.
Or tap on it.
Before you play your next piece, just tell me what the structure of your songs are. It seems very cyclical, and at certain times you slightly change the rhythm, but they're very subtle changes in this music.
That's the way it has always been. It's like a poem, but it is in a form of a song. Some people call it repetitive, some people call it hypnotic, but that's the way the music had been played all this while.
So tell me about this next song you're going to perform for us.
This is a bird. We don't exactly have a name for the bird, but because of the sound that we used to hear around the fruit season. So that's why we call it the fruit bird. And because of the sound that it produced, kang 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 kuk, kang 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 kuk. So I said our forefathers were more creative to take the sound and add up something into it, sound of it, and create music out of it.
Arthur, thank you very much.
So this is what we are going to do.
Rainforest Festival was started off in 1997 on a very small scale, really. Just a few bands on a bandstand in a clearing in the forest. Well, it's grown hugely since then, and besides the local acts, nowadays they invite roots music bands from right across the world. This is Nunukul Yugera, bringing the traditional music of Australia's Aboriginal communities here to the festival. The dancing's pretty amazing, and the music is no less extraordinary too.
We'd like to do for you is about the male initiation. I know women can take part in this dance. See, over in North Stradbroke Island, what we do is when we get to a certain age, the elders will come grab us and they will take us out onto the boat. And what we have to do is we go hunting the dugong, the big sea cow. Now, once we do that, we go take it ashore and we do the cutting up of the dugong. Now, that's all I can speak about on this subject for you folks. This song and dance we call Yungun. The hunting of the dugong. Ayongo naye. Ayongo naye yego. Yana.
Nunukul Yugera, and I'm here with the voice, the talking voice of the group, Rial. I tell you something about your music. It's what I've always thought it would be, but never actually get to hear.
You know, we are one of the oldest living cultures. You know, something that's been passed down through generation, so it's something that we want to keep the tradition alive. And, you know, a lot of it has been wiped out in Australia. That's the sad thing about it. But as long as a couple of us who are still knowing it, and if we can get drum it into the youths early and hopefully get their interest, you know, so we can pass it on, keep on showing the world our culture.
What does the name of the band mean?
Nunukul Yugera, it's two tribes. Yugera occupies the Brisbane region, and Nunukul is just off the east coast of Brisbane, a small island which we call North Stradbroke Island. My Uncle Boydo, Uncle Edward Rusco, and Auntie Denise, his wife, I started the dance troupe up about 20 years ago, and that was to get our youths off the streets and stop them from doing drugs and alcohol, and just put the culture back into the community and show the youth that there's more to life than going out and drinking and having a good time. But, you know, you can have a good time while doing your culture.
So how long have you been doing this for then?
I started dancing when I was about 15. And dancing really saved me from a lot of things. I was on the drugs and alcohol bad when I was 15 and had a couple of troubles in my childhood and that. But when I got there, I started going through a rough phase and was looking at getting locked up. And it wasn't for uncle and auntie pulling my head in and saying, like, you know, this is, you're here now, this is what you got to do, and blah, 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 and et cetera, et cetera. But I think, you know, I probably wouldn't be here doing my culture and probably wouldn't know my culture.
So do you think of yourself as a kind of musical social worker?
Yeah, in a way. Well, see, like, a lot of them are interested. A lot of the youth are interested in it. It's just they're embarrassed about taking their shirt off. That's the main thing, if about showing their bodies, especially for the males. Like, you know, they're, you know, very self-conscious about showing their, you know, a bit of chubbiness or a bit of fat hanging out. So, but when they first, like, you know, take that shirt off and they do it and they feel comfortable doing it, you know, it's just, they keep on going from there. But yeah, if we can get that little bit of group, that little, you know, couple percent of people, then hopefully it just can build on from there.
Do you put a lot of time into finding these old songs, or are they still being, you know, sung by your family and your community?
About half the songs that we do is have been passed down through uncles and fathers, you know, grandfathers and that. But we also got one of our other old singers, Shannon Rusker. He's made up a lot of our songs now, and because he knows the language and, you know, he's mastered the language. So it's sort of like a modern thing now, but still keeping it traditional in, you know, in that sense.
Well, I have to say, listening to you guys on stage, I had a great time, and it's been really inspirational talking to you.
No worries. Thank you. Thank you.
Enjoying yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. He's having a good time at the Rainforest Festival, because I know I am. I'm going to like to take a short break from the dancing now and introduce this instrument to my right hand side. For those of you that do know this instrument, it's called didgeridoo. But us in the Yagara region, we call this instrument Yalawa Buname. Now, what Yalawa Buname means is to throw out sound through a hollow log. Now, how we play this instrument is we'll place our lips inside the mouthpiece and we'll vibrate in a loose fashion, like so. If you do this correctly, you'll get this note. Another note in the Yalawa Buname is the high-pitched note, or the emu bird note. Now, how we do this is we tighten up our lips much tighter, we'll blow much harder, as if we're playing a brass instrument such as a trumpet or a trombone. You do that correctly, you'll get this note. Last but not least is what we call circular breathing. Now, how we do that is we fill up our cheeks with air, slowly take a short breath in through our nose whilst we keep playing. Ladies and gentlemen, the oldest wood pipe instrument in the entire world, dating back over 100,000 years, the didgeridoo, but to us, the Yalawa Buname. Ladies and gentlemen, would you believe he's only 15 years old?
All the way from Indonesia, Rafli I'm gonna get you.
Can you follow me?
Na 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 na. 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 Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Na 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 na. Na 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 na.
Billy McKee, did the Billy Key, Billy McKee, did the Billy Key, Billy McKee, did the Billy Key, Billy McKee, did the Billy Key.
So I'm here with Roughly. Roughly, tell me something about yourself, about where you come from, where you live.
Yeah. Okay, assalamualaikum. Saya Roughly. Nama grup kami Roughly Wasaja. Saya sendiri berasal dari Aceh.
Assalamualaikum. I'm Roughly. The name of our group is Roughly Wasaja. I myself come from Aceh, one of the provinces of Indonesia. I live there, though I do travel around to Jakarta. And of course to other places like here to play my music. The traditional music of Aceh is very special. What makes us different is the message of our music. We don't sing love songs like everyone else. We sing songs about religion, social issues, and saving nature. Our music is very rhythmic, lots of percussion. It's all about strong rhythm.
Most people outside of Asia will only have heard of Aceh when that tragedy of the earthquake happened.
Jadi sebelum tsunami, kami itu sudah berpuluh tahun dihimpit oleh konflik.
The tsunami was a disaster, but for many years before then, we had a long time of conflict between Aceh and the rest of Indonesia. After the tsunami, an agreement, a peace agreement between Indonesia and Aceh was achieved. But during the conflict, I was singing all the time. And I was staging concerts even during the wars. And I used my music as a weapon. But it wasn't a weapon of war. My songs were a weapon of peace. I used to go around the districts telling people, we need peace.
So today, your music is singing about what?
My message is still the same. It's a message of peace. But since the tsunami, we have had peace. Now we need to forgive others. We need to forget the past. We need to move on. We need to build a new society, to strengthen ourselves for a new time of peace. I tell people, close the history, forget it.
You're performing in a rainforest. Yeah. How do you feel about the issue of the rainforest, of conservation?
Yeah, justru semalam saya menonton.
This festival is not just for fun. There should be more. In my opinion, the rainforest should be used as somewhere we can go for contemplation about nature. We have to think about nature. We have to save nature. But I concentrate on saving the environment in Aceh because there are so many investors who come to Aceh and they run plantations, large palm oil plantations, and the people are suffering. I don't like it. No.
So the problems of Indonesia, of Aceh, is the same as the problem here.
Well, the most important thing is that the central government of Indonesia should not recklessly give permissions to anyone who has the money. Not if what they are doing is going to be harmful to the life of our coming generations. We will fight against it.
Roughly, are young people interested in your music?
Yeah.
Yes, in 2001, my first album sold about 2 million copies in Aceh. And the population of Aceh is only 4 million and a half. So, thanks God, all people in Aceh, from small children to old men, now know who is Rafli. I'll sing you one of my songs that everyone loves. The message is, do not give permission to anyone who is going to pull out the forest. I say, if it is in the ground, don't rip it out.
The next song, Harmony Natural. Alan, Harmony. Okay? Yeah.
So the Rainforest Festival brings together musicians from all over the world who although they come from so many very different cultures, actually have a lot in common. Concerns about how to keep their traditions going when they're challenged by the modern world, whether it's young people moving away from their villages or cultures challenged by a commercialism which threatens to destroy the very environment they live in. But they also share a strength, and a strength that comes from regaining their cultural identity in music. And also, as Rafli put it, using music as a weapon to rally people to work for peace and to fight for the preservation of nature. Well, next week there's more from the Rainforest Festival, and we're going deep into the rainforest itself to visit a village with its own strong musical traditions. But let's leave the last word to Rafli's evocation of the rainforest, Harmony Alam, his anthem on the harmony of nature.
Rafli Wa Saja, recorded last month at the Rainforest World Music Festival in Borneo. Lopa Katari will be back with more from the Rainforest Festival in World Roots next Sunday, starting at the later time of 10:30, here on BBC Radio 3.
Berlioz, Mendelssohn, Bach and Beethoven with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra and one of this year's featured Proms artists, the pianist Stephen Huff. Liszt astounded Mendelssohn by sight-reading his first piano concerto in a piano showroom in Paris in 1831. How will Stephen Huff fare with hopefully a little more preparation time? I'm Martin Handley. Join me at the BBC Proms tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
Yes, plenty more from the Proms, not just in the evening but at lunchtime too, with the Proms Chamber Recital at 1 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's 11 o'clock. Time for Jazz Lineup with Claire Martin.
A taster of tonight's special concert set featuring a duo performance by saxophonist Paul Toundrow and pianist Steve Hamilton, recorded at this year's Glasgow Jazz Festival. Also today, Kevin Legendre is here for this month's Now's the Time feature, where he's picked a long-lost jazz treasure from the vaults. Kevin, what have you picked for us today?
I've chosen Japanese saxophonist Sadao Watanabe's How's Everything? Live at Budokan, because it's one of the great live jazz albums that I can think of, and it has really, really good tracks like this.
Also on the programme, I'll be joined by saxophonist and festival director Brandon Allen to tell us about the Highgate Jazz with Soul Festival, which begins next week. But let's start the show with some major jazz royalty. Saxophonist Swain Shorter is one of the music's great names, and tomorrow sees the release of a box set out on the Proper label that covers his early work with pianist Wynton Kelly and with Art Blakey's Jazz Messengers. Revealing his early talents as a brilliant improviser and composer, let's hear the track Dead End.
Thank you.
Dead End by Wayne Shorter from a brand new retrospective box set released tomorrow on Proper Records. And Wayne will be at this year's London Jazz Festival performing with the BBC Concert Orchestra in November. Look out for that broadcast right here on Jazz Lineup. At this year's Parliamentary Jazz Awards, The Impossible Gentlemen won the award for Best Jazz Ensemble. Well, they've just released their second album, which promises more risks and musical adventures while still remaining accessible. In addition to the group's quartet of Gwilym Simcock, Mike Walker, Steve Swallow and Adam Nussbaum, is 13 Grammy Award winner Steve Rodby, who produced the CD and plays bass on two of the tracks. It's called Internationally Recognised Aliens, and this is the track The Sliver of Other Lovers. Thank you. Great solos there for pianist Gwilym Simcock and guitarist Mike Walker. And that was the track The Sliver of Other Lovers, taken from the new CD by the Impossible Gentlemen called Internationally Recognised Aliens. The band will be on tour throughout October, starting with their first night on Thursday the 10th at Watermill Jazz in Dorking. So look out for them in the listings. Back in January of last year, Jazz Lineup recorded a very special edition of the programme at Morley College in London to celebrate the great jazz vocalist Mark Murphy. An icon for jazz singers worldwide, Mark performed in an intimate duo setting with the brilliant pianist George Mesterhazy. Sadly, it was a great shock to learn that just a couple of months later, George passed away unexpectedly from natural causes at the age of only 59. Both these musicians were closely associated with Washington-based pianist-singer Shirley Horne, and with his newly released four-track vinyl EP, Mark pays a wonderful musical tribute to her with young New York pianist Alex Minasian, bassist Curtis Lundy, and Steve Williams, who was Shirley Horne's much-loved drummer for 25 years. Sounding every bit as vocally daring and dynamic, Mark, who's now in his early 80s, gives his unique treatment to a